WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Yes, you're tuned in to Monday Night Talk with the one and only Kevin Tachi. That's me. Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD. We have a great show lined up for you. We do our best to make sure that the program, it's always different somehow, some way. Entertaining, I hope so. Informative, that too. Joining me, he has returned. He will be... we'll debate that after the show to see if there was a continued absence or not. But joining me as my special guest co-host, the original co-host of this portion of Monday Night Talk under my tenure, Joe Rossi, returns into the big seat.
Only because you enticed me with the ability to talk about flood insurance at the end. That is why I showed up.
You got to know how to bait the hook, Joe. You have to know how to bait the hook.
That's right. Well, it worked.
And the caveat was flood insurance.
That's right.
And you being... somebody who is very well versed in this area. Joe, I've talked to your mom, and she has told me that you like, when you're sleeping, you're mumbling about, you know, floodplains and insurance. And
I can assure the listeners you've never talked to my mother before.
Well, I can assure residents you've never been to McGuigan's pub either, so.
Back to that. Nothing's changed. Nothing has changed.
Richard Rosen was on last week. And
was he really?
We did bring you up for half a second.
That's funny.
One of these days, there will be a Joe Rossi sighting at one of our sponsors.
Okay.
Wiggins Pub. But no, we're going to look forward to chatting with you this evening and getting the latest, because with the new administration, in other than being under investigation for other things like wiretapping and any connection to the Russians, there could be some changes in regards to the national flood insurance, the rates and coverage.
Well, and you call me at a good time because I leave Wednesday night for a national tour where I'll be going to New Orleans and Scottsdale to talk to leaders in the field and start, because there is huge legislative action happening now. So we can talk all about that at 7:30.
Excellent. We definitely look forward to it. But we'll start things off. We have our State House report, and she's already here. We have the 3rd Plymouth District.
Yes.
State Representative Joan Moschino is here. She's beaming, and we're looking forward to having her kind of chatted up as to how things are up on the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll look forward to talking with you about that and just kind of get a general feel as to how things are going in the district. It's your opportunity to kind of talk about what is going on in your district and some of the things that you've been working on since you got elected.
Great.
So we'll look forward to that. Then kind of the theme that we've been doing over the past couple of weeks, chatting with folks who are seeking office on the local level, as we've had different candidates in who are running for selectmen in various towns in and around our listening area, our coverage. We had Bill Dowling. He is a selectman. He's actually the selectman chair in the town of East Bridgewater, and we'll be speaking with him. He's seeking re-election to a second term. And then Jim Mars. He is a journalist. He's an author. And we are going to get his perspective in regards to what life might be like in the year 3000. And this is according to L. Ron Hubbard's book, Battlefield Earth, and also a great physicist. I think he's a physicist. He might have more titles. Stephen Hawking, who actually is on board with L. Ron Hubbard's theory. So we're going to find out how science and science fiction meet when we speak with Jim Mars. More in just a moment as we will take a moment to pull into the WATD Traffic Center, being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, and Stoughton.
Over the past, 10 years, Brennan Smoke Shop's customers have given thousands of dollars in spare change to our local charity, the Nathan Hale Foundation. That money has been used for the Nathan Hale Veterans Outreach Center and Three Hearts Farm Veterans Growing Opportunities.
Hello, a tip cup in a smoke shop?
No way, it's not a tip cup. It's our cigar box charity bin. Brennan's customers, I repeat, Brennan's customers have donated thousands of dollars to the Nathan Hale Foundation, a registered 501c3 located in Plymouth and Middleborough. I'd like to thank all of our great and loyal customers for giving so much to this great and worthy charity. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for helping us help our local veterans. Brennan Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and coming soon, at some point, to Pope's Island, New Bedford.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we are back here, live from Broadcast House. Joining us is State Representative Joan Moschino. Been a while since we've had you here.
Yes, but it's nice to be back. Thanks so much for having me in.
How is life treating you up on the Hill?
Oh, it's great. I am having a ball. We got sworn in on January 4th. It is an amazing thing to be in the building. I walk up to the State House mornings, and it's like I'm a little kid. I'm so giddy. I'm like, oh my gosh, I work here. but the building's beautiful. It's historic, and it's actually really very special to be in there. And we're having a great time. You get sworn in on January 4, and you get to work the next day, so it's good.
Now, are you still in the bullpen, or have they given you a space yet?
No, we're still in the bullpen.
Okay. Explain what that is.
I feel like a college freshman. So what it is that when you have your incoming freshman class, there happen to be 12 of us, they don't have immediate seats for you. So they empty out a hearing room, and they set up literally plastic tables with a computer and a phone, and it's you sit right there with you and your aide, and you're there until... they rearrange the house. You know, people come and go, and they change the leadership, and you sit with your committees. And then once they get that all settled, they find whatever little cubby is left for freshmen like me.
Oh.
That's all right. I am very excited for my little cubby. But it's fun to be in the bullpen because you get to know the other freshman reps. It's a great group. They're all really motivated by public service, and they're all really good people. It's good to build those relationships, and it's nice to do things as a class. In fact, the building's very welcoming. I was really surprised. I'd have to say that was the thing that surprised me the most. You run, you get elected, and then the next day you wake up and you're like, someone going to call me? And in fact, they do. But there's a lot of things that are sort of set up for you as a new rep to come in and explain the process and meet the people and the constitutional offices. And it's very welcoming, right from the security guards right on up to the Speaker of the House.
What is it? What have you been able to take to quickly? And what are you still trying to get up to speed with? There's got to be that one or two things that it came really quick, or a couple things where you're like, oh, I got to do this.
So first of all, once you get in, it does take a little bit of time, but they assigned us all to committees. So I actually got great committees. I'm on joint committees for transportation, for community development and small business, for telecommunication, utility, and energy, and then a house committee post audit and oversight. But I'm actually very excited because those are very sort of meaty, substantive committees, and especially transportation right now, I think will be busy. And they're ones that will really position me to learn a lot and be influential for things that are really important to our district. So I'm actually pretty excited about that. I think it's the process, the ebb and the flow of the, I don't even know how to explain it, but you're day, you know, when to be in the, when to try to be in the city and when to try to really be in the district. The ebb and the flow and getting into a routine, that's the piece that's...
That's the word right there, getting into a routine.
Yeah, that's it. That's been a little bit of a struggle, but, you know, they have a lot of briefings at the beginning of the session, and I'm trying to meet as many people as I can, the lobbyists, the activists, the other reps, the committee chairs, things like that. So it's been very busy, but it's been tons of fun. It's really interesting stuff.
Have you done a lot of, I know you're right up there a couple months now, have you done a lot of constituent work yet or issues based work from the district?
Yes. So, in fact, people started finding us right away, which was great. I was a little worried because we don't even have voicemail because it's this temporary situation.
Right.
So we were really worried at first we might miss people. But the email is joan.moschino@mahouse.gov. So you can, anybody can email me. My aide's name is Ryan Heffernan.
He's a great guy.
And, you know, people have started finding us, and we have started holding office hours in the district in three of the towns, and then we'll do that last piece. We're going to do it at the library in North Scituate once the library is open later in April. So, yeah, so it's been going really good, and it's actually really gratifying and a lot of fun to hear from people and to start to help them with just everything. So, yeah, it's good.
If I can use a little bit of a cliche here, but Ryan helped thread the needle to this conversation, and where I reached out to you, but yet I was able to speak with him and kind of give him an idea as to what our conversation would entail, some of the things that we would discuss, and of course you'll make sure when you go back and say, well, don't forget, I'll be back on a regular basis, because the idea,
right.
We have a great rotation of state reps and state senators who come on this program, and it kind of gives each of you an opportunity to brag about some of the stuff you're doing, talk about some of the snags that you got going on with certain bills or some of the things that you're working on, and it's again, the idea is for us to help you communicate what you're doing up at the State House.
Well, and I have to say thank you to you also, because in fact, during the campaign, and you know, I had the two, right? We did the special first and then we did the state rep. It was surprising to me how little public forum opportunity to communicate with voters there is. And I have to say kudos to WATD and to the weekly papers. They do a great job.
They really do.
And, really hats off to good communication.
The weekly papers are doing what the bigger papers, again, this is no knock on, you know, bigger papers, whether they're in the Boston area or serving the South Shore, but the weekly papers really take advantage of trying to make sure that they fill their pages as to things that are going on, whether it's an elected official or some of the issues, events, right. Community stuff, to keep people informed.
Yep, and connected, which is really nice. And it's all, there are no alternative facts there. I know all those editors, so
okay.
They're spot on.
I was worried there for a moment.
But it's good. So you asked about legislation. So we, you get right to it. So the first order of business was bill filing. And, I'm a freshman rep. There are long-term, initiatives that the senior reps, the people that are in, the seasoned reps that have been elected many times before are working on. So I really kind of looked for, was there any gaps? Were there any pieces that we could follow up on?
Right.
So the thing that we actually filed was a gas leaks bill, and it's really meant to focus on conservation first before we put new infrastructure in. That idea of fix it first, and of course, if you look at the maps in Third Plymouth, which is Hull, Hingham, Cohasset, and North Scituate, Cohasset in particular, is tons of gas leaks. So I thought that would be a great way to just be really pragmatic. It speaks to all of my priorities, economic development, especially for the village centers, for small towns,
right.
Transportation, a little less there, but also around the conservation piece, and then green. I'm very concerned about sea level rise and the climate change. So I felt like that was a piece that really played well into some pre-existing efforts. We also filed a few bills around criminal, well, it's really legal aid for CPCS on some of the It's really how to help streamline how legal aid represents children in foster care, and then also to give the courts the ability to waive probation fees for people who qualify for legal aid. So that came from some people in the district, a constituent, but also from some of my old legal aid pals. So we kept it really simple, and then we only signed on to bills where we felt like it fit within sort of those three priorities, really that arose out of the district's issues, and that we felt, were really concrete, things that we could talk about working on. And we kept it small. I only co-sponsored about 50 bills. So
only 50 bills.
That's so 5,700 bills get filed. It was astonishing, absolutely astonishing. The South Shore delegation asked me to sign on to a few things. Sure. Rep Cutler, Rep Cantwell, Rep Coulter, and Rep Murphy have been fantastic, really welcoming and very supportive. So we filed some things for them. We filed some things when constituents reached out. But we kept it really, manageable. So
we use a bird analogy here.
Uh-oh.
I know a lot of the South Shore representation has taken you under their wing, so to speak. Who would you say has the warmest wing?
Oh, that's interesting.
Just more so meaning that it seems as though you're the person that you're kind of, in touch with probably the most. Not that nobody else is there for you, but it just seems like it's kind of a knack.
I have to say it's Jim Cantwell. He is very much a natural mentor, and I'm sure his constituents, all of the people that live in Marshfield and Scituate, know this. He's very thoughtful. He works incredibly hard. He's incredibly supportive. He's really probably the person who's most proactive. But then I have to say, Josh Cutler is a close second. So is Jamie Murphy. They've also spent some pretty significant time, with. I'm a freshman. I've got a lot of basic questions, and I have to say they are all incredibly patient. When I text, I'm like, "How do you do this?"
How important is that you have understanding mentors? You have folks who who you're working with here on the South Shore that they're willing to help you at a moment's notice, a text message away.
Well, I think that's important in anybody's career development, professionally or students. Right. And I always try to mentor when I get to that point where I can. But I think it's absolutely critical. There is definitely a culture and an ebb and flow in the house. And, you really do, it's incumbent on me as the new person to figure out how to fit myself in and how to meet the right all of the people, establish those relationships so that I can be influential at the right moments in the right ways. So I think mentorship is absolutely critical. So
how do you pace yourself there's so much going on that I'm sure it's easy to be overwhelmed by the process and the things that are going on. And again, you said there's 5,700 bills that are filed. You decided smartly enough to sign on to about 50 of them. How do you make sure that you're pacing yourself correctly as a legislator?
Well, I think it starts with the district. So I was represented to work for the people in Third Plymouth. And so for me, every day, that's where it starts, is, what does the district need? So I've been making the rounds to all my selectmen. I was just in front of the Cohasset Board of Selectmen, and this happened to be the Cohasset School Committee the week before, just to get to know them, establish those relationships, what can we help them with, make sure that people know how to find me. It really, for me, it starts with the district, and that's been the sort of lens that we've used in terms of everything we do. And it's been interesting to see what the issues are that have percolated up out of there, and the bills and the issues that people have brought to us already. It was funny. It was getting from all of the bee pollinators about, the environment, and it was just not an issue I knew about. But it's absolutely a critical one, and I'm grateful to them for raising it. And more recently, there was a health insurance Delta health insurance plan changed, and that impacts people who work in the district. So, they brought that to us, and we'll start working on it. So, and you mentioned flood insurance. Jim Cantwell is the guru on that.
No. Joe Rossi is the guru on that.
Joe Rossi is.
A close second is Jim Cantwell.
Jim has had
his finger on the pulse since a lot of this went down, and he's been there and
Oh, yes. He's been great. I mean, he's been our voice, you know, at the local legislative level for...
And beyond, I would say.
Well, yeah, and but beyond. I mean, just to get some stuff done here, immediate results type of stuff. He's just really, really good. In fact, we have active legislation at the state level that he and I have worked on, which will be... I can't talk too much about it, but it'll become critical down the road. So, yeah, but absolutely some... You know, a lot of interesting stuff kind of going on at the state level, and it's really kind of interesting to see how you've already tackled a lot of that.
Well, you know, it's about finding out what's happening,
yeah,
and taking your cues from the people that have already become experts and taken a lead on it, and then seeing how I can add my voice to theirs. And I'll find my thing. You know, right now, so we just are in the middle of the budget process.
Mm.
So,
that's my next question.
Oh, well, go ahead.
No. Please continue on, and I'll ask. Trust me.
For me, you know, we got a chance to meet with the House Ways and Means, and I raised two issues that I just thought were really super important. The first being, of course, opiate addiction, and each of the three of our towns has some really good strategies, and so I asked for funding for the school resource officers because I thought that this was a great investment in young people, and it's going to tag team with initiatives that are going on in the public health sector and the private sector, and the public-private partnership, especially Cohasset's really embraced it and has really robust programming that's coming along. And I just thought that was critically important that we have those pilot programs and those investments. The other that I asked for was actually libraries. Right now, we're such small towns, and our libraries are imperiled. So I've actually been advocating to increase the OCLN distribution, the money that supports the network distribution and the database access. Because that, again, for $1 million of investment for the whole state means that our libraries are more robust. They can continue to, to circulate all, and that's a physical job that circulates books. It's not just e-books. So I felt that those were two things that would really help the people in our district.
Libraries do so much more than just provide a book for you to sign out and take home for a couple of weeks. As we got coming up after the 7 o'clock hour, Richard Hand, a numismatist who is going to talk about National Coin Week. The Brockton Public Library is going to be the place where that'll happen. But they provide entertainment. They provide other little small things that folks don't realize that other than a book.
Yep.
You know, if you have a favorite DVD,
right,
they have those where you can just check them out.
Well, and they're curated. They can help you find trusted resources.
Correct.
They supplement school budgets and learning. It's lifelong learners, seniors who can't afford maybe internet or the paper. I mean, it really is your original community center, and there's so much early education programming, and we absolutely have to protect our library funding. It's for such a small investment. It has such a statewide impact.
Talk to us about the budget process. This is your first up close look at it, and you're right in on it. What has it been like to kind of get an idea as to what the Commonwealth spends and how your district will do compared to others?
So it's been fascinating. So what they do is they put out, the governor puts out House One, and House Ways and Means jumps right to it. Everybody starts, looking at it. And you do get to meet and to say what each rep, what their priority is. And bless their hearts, they actually meet with the freshman reps, and they seem to listen. So that was great. But next, what will happen is they'll come out with a recommended budget, we'll file our amendments, and then we'll debate. So I'm actually kind of excited to see how this is all going to work. And I've already started talking to people about, what my two priorities that I've put forward. But there's a lot of other pieces. And I think it really signals, the budget is the place that signals where you invest your dollars. Those are your priorities. And, I think that overall, it's a decent budget, but I guess I would argue that we've gotten to a point now where some of the cuts are cuts for efficiency's sake, and we've passed the law of diminishing returns. And I'd argue that with the libraries, that has definitely happened. The other place I see it was with the environment. So DEP, DCR, places like that, where I'm actually really concerned that they have now so cut those pieces that those agencies will struggle to actually fulfill their mission. So I think there's a lot of things to discuss and debate, and I'm a freshman, I get it, I know, and I'm probably not going to have like a lot, you know, to say. And quite frankly, my style has always been to not to sit back, but to really observe, to really learn the process, and to look for those moments where I can really have some influence and you know, a comment at the right moment of, you know, this is what we think, can really be influential. So yeah, I'll keep you posted on how it goes. It's apparently it's a crazy process. So we'll see.
Well, we definitely thank you for coming in. We thank Ryan for making sure this happens, and I'll be in touch with Ryan for future conversations with you, Representative Moschino. I just want to kind of touch on somebody sent me a message. They enjoyed Jeff and Eileen Hills, some good friends of the program. From Healthy Appetites, sending a message saying they enjoyed the warmest wing comment, that they enjoyed that.
Oh, so, that's so nice to hear. That's
say hello to you as they're a fan of yours as well. Folks want to reach out to you, they're in your district, something you're working on, or if they, you know, have a question, how can they do that?
So right now, the best way is email joan.moschino@mahouse.gov. But go on to mass.gov under the legislature in the House of Representatives. You can see every single person listing, because right now we're in temporary space, but the phone number and the office number will change. And then keep an eye out for the local papers, because we do publish when our office hours are, and I should have written it down because I just don't remember off the top of my head when next one is, but it's probably the second Monday will be in Cohasset. I think that's the next one at the Senior Center at 9:30. But just give us a call at the State House or shoot us an email, and we'll get right back to you, and we'll go from there. And I look forward to seeing everyone.
Be patient. She's waiting for her cubbyhole right now. You have to be patient right now. It's pure chaos in the bullpen.
It is.
And we thank you very much for coming in and chatting. And it's refreshing, and we're glad that the folks on the South Shore, the state reps and senators are helping you, guiding you, and that you're doing quite well. And we'll look forward to having you back on in a couple of weeks just to check up on you.
Great. Sounds perfect.
There she is, the State Representative Joan Moschino, representing the 3rd Plymouth District. We are going to step aside just for a couple of moments, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD. And you're listening to Monday Night Talk, the program that I hope the South Shore tunes into to hear people talk and talk about certain issues and items and ideas. What we have done over the past 4, 5, 6 weeks has we've tried to reach out to folks who are running for office, mostly the selectmen. I mean, when you think of town or city government, you think of a council, you think of selectmen. Not too often on the South Shore, you think of aldermen, but who knows, down the road, you know, a community may want to change things to their town charter. But we're continuing that trend during this week's show, And joining me is a gentleman who is currently on the Board of Selectmen in the town of East Bridgewater. His name is Bill Dowling, and he is joining us here. Welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Thank you for having me.
For folks who may or may not know you outside of the town of East Bridgewater, can you give us a little bit of a bio on yourself as to what it is that Bill likes to do and your service to the town of East Bridgewater?
Sure. We've lived here in East Bridgewater since 2002. My wife and I live here right near the center of town. We have four kids, all young kids, 12, 9, 6, and 7. Years ago, I worked as an EMT down in Plymouth for about 10 or 11 years. Put myself through college. I graduated from Suffolk University, Bachelor of Arts in History and Government. From there, I went to work in mutual funds in Boston. I worked in for Columbia Funds and Liberty Funds for several years. And once we started having children, and I started staying home, and my wife and I started doing foster care for special needs kids. We had a couple kids stay with us for a short period, and we decided we wanted to expand our family. So with the children we were taking in, we've adopted 3 children. I had enough time at home that I decided I wanted to get more involved in town affairs. So I was put on the finance committee. I did that for a few years. And then from there, I was elected to the Board of Selectmen 3 years ago in a contested race. And I've been doing that since. So, I like giving back to the town. I'm also the treasurer for East Bridgewater Youth Soccer. I've been doing that probably for about 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
I also volunteer here in town as one of the soccer coaches. And many times up at St. John's Church when they need someone to cook for the barbecues, I'm up there cooking and helping out with those sort of things. So, pretty much I stay here in town and, try and volunteer when I can. It's getting a little busy now with soccer season and, the campaign and election coming up. So, I figure while I've got the time now, I can, really give back to the town.
What was the transition like going from the finance committee, that's an appointed board, to, getting into a full-on contested race to, sit on the top governing board in the community?
It actually wasn't that bad. I thought it would be more to it, but I think, attending all of the finance committee meetings, meeting with our town administrator, George Samia, I felt like I had a good handle on, what was going on in town, what the big issues were in town at that time. It was a pretty smooth transition. The board members were very welcoming once I got sworn in, and things have worked out pretty good. I think at that time, even though it's still an issue, one of the big issues in town was school funding. Per pupil expenditures are pretty low. We're at the bottom in the state list for per pupil expenditures. So over the last couple of years, with a little more state aid and a lot more infusion of money from the town, we've been able to increase it a little bit. But, I would say right now that's like still an ongoing issue.
Now, as what happens on a regular basis, an annual basis, when there are town elections, there's usually a reorganization of the board. What is your other than being a selectman, have you had a chance to get the gavel as chairman? I mean, are you chairman now?
Yep. Every year after the election, we reorganize.
Yep.
So it's been a pretty good rotation. Everyone gets a chance at being chairman of the board. I've been chairman this past year. Before I was member at large and also the clerk. We only have 3 selectmen in town, so we rotate once a year.
If I could ask you, Bill, what has it been like to be the chair, and what has it been like to serve these past 3 years on the Board of Selectmen? I mean, what would you point to some of the things that you've been able to accomplish?
I think over the last couple years, I really think in a small town, you know, the town administrator really handles everything day to day.
Right.
My town administrator, you know, has been doing a good job bringing in grants. We recently received a grant for $200,000 to clean up or study the ground soil at the old Eastman State Mill in the precision engineering from years ago, and that's been an ongoing issue in town for, you know, 20-plus years. Another thing we've been able to do is increase the solar host agreement. I believe our electric bill is probably around $600,000 or $700,000 per year, and with the solar agreements, we're able to get credit. And I think we're just around $280,000 in credit on our electric bill. So that for a small town, that's a big, big savings. Another thing we've also been doing is working on these TIF agreements, the tax agreements with businesses. And the 47 brand is actually going to move into the old Shaw's warehouse, which for the most part, probably half the building's been empty since Shaw's moved out years ago. And 47 brand makes all the fanware for Major League Baseball, NFL. I've never heard of them, but apparently if you're a young teenage sports fan, you know that brand.
Right.
They make high-quality, fan gear. So they're moving into town. So I would say the last couple of years, that's been the big accomplishment, is getting 47 into town. They're bringing in 30 jobs initially. As part of the agreement, over the next 5 years, they're going to give jobs to 30 East Bridgewater residents. And right now they have 300 employees. So as things go along, we're hoping that more of the factory jobs come here to East Bridgewater. Another accomplishment is we hired a new police chief last June, went through the whole process, the interview process. We hired an outside firm to come in and interview all the candidates. So we appointed Chief Scott Allen to the position last June, and he's been doing a great job with it. He does a lot of work with East Bridgewater Hope, which works with opiate addicts and their families, trying to get them the help and the assistance that they desperately need. Another thing we've done is we worked on another TIF agreement with another business in the Foxborough Company. Town meeting approved it, but unfortunately the business wasn't able to work out a final deal with the building owner. And I think another big accomplishment is just, the increased funding for the schools. But I really think, it's selectmen, like I said, the town administrator really handles the day-to-day part of it. I think it's more or less setting the tone, for how the board is going to work with the other departments and the small businesses that we have in town. And I think I've done a great job of, building up those relationships over the years.
Again, we're speaking with East Bridgewater Board of Selectmen Chair Bill Dowling. Yeah. As he is up for re-election this spring. And kind of touching on one of the things that you brought up in regards to accomplishments and talking about EB Hope, which is kind of an outreach when we're talking about tackling this opioid epidemic. Give me your thoughts in regards to, a community like East Bridgewater trying to tackle something like this that is affecting the whole Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a tough issue. I mean, I don't think any small town is going to completely combat an epidemic that's really just taken over the country. I mean, when you look at the number of people that are dying from this, it's just shocking. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So I think for us, and I would say Dave Sheedy, he's a selectman, he does an awful lot of work with E.B. Hope and Susan Silver and Chief Allen. I think every other Thursday they meet at the church. It's open doors. They have beds available on most nights. And I think for a small town, it's a great program. But I think until the federal government steps up more and actually does something with these pharmaceutical companies, this is it's a start, but it's not going to obviously eradicate this issue. I think it's an issue of, doctors over-prescribing.
Yep.
I read an article the other day that I think the U.S. has more opiate prescriptions written per capita than anywhere else in the world. I don't like to place the blame on any one group or doctors, but, I've known of a few, younger kids that have gotten their wisdom teeth pulled. Years ago, when we were younger, it was take the Motrin and put some ice on it.
Yep.
Now it's, here's the prescription for some narcotics. I mean, it's shocking.
How times have changed, huh, Bill?
Oh, yes, and not always for the better, unfortunately.
Right, that is true. You also brought up town meeting, and we know that town meeting, the event itself is the purest form of a democracy. That's what people like to say, those who get a chance to partake in it. Give me your thoughts about whether it being an attendee to town meeting or maybe even the town's upcoming town meeting, anything that might be on the warrant, the town meeting warrant or an article that you feel that is going to be a conversation, whether it's part of your race or just for the town moving forward in the future.
Well, we actually haven't received everything that would be going through the Capitol and the Finance Committee,
right.
Such as any purchase, capital expenditures, that sort of thing yet. But I think as far as I know, I don't believe there'll be anything controversial. I mean, obviously, it will be town budget and any sort of other capital projects that might be coming through. But that's still working its way through our Capitol Committee and the Finance Committee. I'm sure, the schools usually have some small repair projects. Every couple of years, we purchase new police cruisers, that sort of thing.
Right.
I know last year, the fire department got the funding for a new fire engine and a new vehicle for the police chief. And we also usually try and fit in some road repair projects in that, along with the state funding. I don't anticipate anything controversial coming up this year. I know we're holding most of the departments to probably a 2% increase. We're still waiting to see what the financial figures coming in from the state are going to be.
Right.
I know the schools have received their sheets, but I believe on the town side, we're still awaiting final numbers.
Okay.
But for the most part, I think most of the departments will, they usually go up 2 or 3% each year. And I think we're going to try and hold most of them to the 2%. And we're still working with the schools to see what their needs are and to work on their final budget.
Well, we got just a couple of moments left here, and this will give you an opportunity to remind residents in East Bridgewater, those who don't participate all that much when it comes to town elections, when town elections are, or just a friendly reminder, and if you want to give them a kind of a tagline as to why they should, when they go into the voting booth, why they should check off Bill Dowling's name for a second term.
Sure. Well, like I said, I've got the experience from working in mutual funds years ago. I've been a regular member of the Finance Committee. I've been on the Board of Selectmen now for 3 years. And I think years ago, anyone that follows it really remembers all the controversies. I think I've set a better tone where everybody is working together to, move this town forward and, put it in the right direction. I know a lot of people in town, myself included, as a taxpayer, is very concerned with the tax rate. Right now we're at 1830. And I think I've really done what I can over the years to try and keep our taxes down. This past year, we had a group that was trying to push the Community Preservation Act, and I actually argued very vocally against that on Facebook and other social media platforms, as well as writing an opinion piece in the Boston Globe.
Wow.
So, you know, people asked me when I ran years ago, what are you going to do to help keep taxes down? And I think I've done what I could to deliver on that. So, you know, I hope people can come out and support me for another 3 years on April 8th. People in town know me. I volunteer. I spend a lot of time here in town hearing people's concerns. I listen to them. I'm very open. So, yeah, I'd appreciate it now they vote on April 8th.
And now, depending on what ends up happening, whatever the results are on April 9th, you do know that you do have friends here at 95.9 WATD, and if there are, you know, issues or conversations that arise that you you want to get on the airwaves here during Monday Night Talk, you can always reach out and say hello to me, and we can have that discussion.
Sure, I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
And we appreciate your time, Bill, and we wish you, and of course, we wish all candidates the best of luck. It's not easy running for office. It can be daunting at times. It can be fun. It can wear out a couple of pairs of shoes depending on how much you're getting out there knocking on doors and meeting and greeting people. So we definitely wish you the best of luck, my friend.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You got it. There he is, Bill Dowling. He is seeking a re-election, a second term to the East Bridgewater Board of Selectmen. He currently has the gavel. He is the chair. And he's getting out there, hoping that folks will turn out to the polls on April 8th when East Bridgewater has their town elections. We're going to step aside just for a couple of moments. But when we return, I promise you, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Hour number two of Monday Night Talk. Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here. Don't forget, coming up at 8 o'clock, South Shore Live with Stan Blackmer and the gang. But till then, we'll keep you informed and entertained. We are waiting to hear from Mr. Jim Mars. He is our guest. Hopefully, we'll hear from him in a few moments. There was during that little break that we had, there was some kind of an issue trying to reach out to him. So hopefully, we can get him on the line and be able to chat with him about this concept. But we have, of course, our next guest is already sitting here. Actually, our next two guests are sitting here. Just to kind of put it into perspective, we are going to hopefully speak to Jim Mars in just a couple of moments. But following Jim, depending on if we get Jim on the phone line, we have Mr. Richard Hand. He is a numismatist. What is that you say? Well, he's a gentleman who deals in coins and currency. And we're going to chat with him about, well, we do it on an annual basis. We chat with him about National Coin Week, the celebration coming up that'll be held at the Brockton, Maine Public Library. This will be on Saturday, April 15th. And you're talking about a guy who He knows his coins. I've been dealing with Richard long enough that he knows his stuff, and he usually has goodies. You're somebody who likes coins. I've always, some people, they like collecting stamps. Me, I always liked the coins. I liked, whether it's the paper currency, whether it's the coins. If you've ever watched, like, Pawn Stars, when somebody comes in, they go, oh, I got this coin. And Richard Harris will be looking at it, making sure that there's nothing nefarious is going on, because some people will try to find a way to
alter the date, mint marks.
Counterfeit
the whole coin.
They'll try to find a way to counterfeit the coin. So we'll, I've always had a bit of a thing for when it comes to coins. So why I never became like a numismatist myself, I don't know, but I always enjoy my segments with Richard. Richard, of course, is here this week. He was unable to make it last week, but he found his way. He's actually been here since 6:30. So we thank you, Richard, for traveling down here and making your way down here. And, of course, Joe Rossi, our flood insurance expert. Also, he is my co-host for this evening. Now, I'm getting the thumbs up from Ryan. I want to thank Ryan Stanton, who is my producer, good guy, glad to have you on the board this evening. I'm going to set this up. When I got an email a couple of weeks ago from some of the folks, a PR firm, and the subject line said, fake news, ? Humans could be extinct in 1,000 years. Ooh, that piqued my interest. Really? Well, now, so the gentleman who's going to be joining us in just a couple of seconds here is going to kind of give us a culturally entertaining comparison between L. Ron Hubbard, because L. Ron Hubbard wrote the book Battlefield Earth, and also we have, I want to say he's a physicist. I don't know his exact title. Maybe he's a scientist, Stephen Hawking. And I guess between the author and an individual who studies science, both of them seem to think that we could be on a course to be extinct in the year 3000 if we do not find a way to get the hell off this rock and find our way onto another planet, another area of the universe. So joining us right now is Jim Mars. He is an author and an award-winning journalist and New York best-selling author, Jim Mars. Jim, welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Well, Kevin, it's a distinct pleasure to be with you.
Now, just so you know, I have Richard Hand and I have Joe Rossi, so they may ask questions in regards to this particular topic. Give us your thoughts on this whole saga that if we do not find a way to colonize and populate another planet, that it could mean our end.
Well, yes, and of course, not only just because of the crowding, but because of the lack of resources.
Right.
I mean, we're using up, we're cutting down thousands and millions of acres of rainforest just so McDonald's can produce a few more burgers.
So what can we do? I mean, the first things first here. I mean,
Kevin, it sounds like we're doomed if we do and we're doomed if we don't. We, particularly here in North America, have become the most consuming society in the history of the world. If we suddenly all woke up and said, hey, this is on a path to disaster, let's just stop. You know, I'm not going to buy that new car. I'm not going to buy a new house. I'm not going to buy a new suit. I'll just make do with the one I got.
Right.
Well, that all sounds fine and good, but what would happen? The economy would collapse.
Right.
Okay? So, but yet, if we just keep consuming at the rates we're doing it, I think it's all going to collapse anyway. So, I don't know. It doesn't look real good for the future. And that's why far-sighted individuals like Stephen Hawking and like L. Ron Hubbard, particularly, he was a world traveler. He had really been to a lot of places and had served during World War II, and he really knew a lot of stuff. And I think he realized that in the year 3000, man might be an endangered species, so he wrote Battlefield Earth, which came out, I believe, about 1982. And that's kind of why I'm in on this whole thing. I remember reading that when it first came out. It was a great book. We won't mention the movie, but the book was great. And and I think why there are parallels today, and the reason we need to pay attention to it today, is because it's not just an alien going to get you movie like we've kind of gotten accustomed to, like
Independence Day.
Independence Day. Yeah. Now, in this one, it's the intergalactic bankers loan money to the intergalactic mining corporation to strip mine the Earth, and but they're on a contract and they're on a deadline, and it looks like they might miss it. And if they miss it, then they lose all their money, and the bank it takes over, and the bank then sells the Earth to the highest bidder. And the problem seems to be these pesky humans that are still hanging around, and so the mining company goes and hires these tall, hairy aliens from the planet Cyclos. I've always loved that. That's just one letter off of Psychos, right?
Right.
And they come here to try to try to maintain order and get them back on schedule. So, in other words, Kevin, it's just a business deal. And I think that seems to be where we are right now. We can't seem to stop this ever increasing consumerism because it's business. It's good for business. Mm. And now, even our space program, you know, now the government is just, I don't know, all but gotten out of it, and now it's people like Elon Musk and private companies that are starting to pick up the banner for space exploration. I don't know. Who knows where it's all going to lead?
That is definitely interesting. I have to ask, how well do you know both Mr. Stephen Hawking and L. Ron Hubbard, and would you know if they knew each other? Because it's kind of eerie how both of them have the same viewpoint.
Well, now, first off, personally, I never met either one of them. I've read a lot of Hubbard's books. I was reading Hubbard before he wrote Battlefield Earth. He was a prolific science fiction author, and a lot of people don't realize this because Scientology has gotten in the way. But prior to that, back going to the 30s and the 40s and yes, the 50s, he was considered as big a name in science fiction as Arthur C. Clarke or Ray Bradbury or Isaac Asimov. So I was reading Hubbard way back there. Now, as far as would Hubbard and Hawking know each other, I doubt seriously if they actually met, but I would be surprised if Hawking, as smart as he is, hadn't read some of Hubbard's stuff. We're all in this together, and in fact my motto is none of us are as smart as all of us. And so we share information, and we build whole ideas, concepts and theses by embracing all the work that the other people have done. Now Hawking, on the one hand, seems to I think he understands that our place in the universe is actually kind of somewhat precarious, because after all, we're out on this little mud ball sailing around this third-rate sun out on the outer fringes of the Milky Way galaxy. In other words, we're out in the boondocks, and yet here we are sending Voyager 1, Voyager 2 into deep space. Both of them are now interstellar. Right. They have left the solar system. And in fact, before I forget about it, this will make your hair stand up. Voyager 2 is still operating, and it's been sending back binary code, you know, messages of information, data, whatever it is they're sending back. And all of a sudden, the I's and the O's got switched. It got flipped. And it's still broadcasting, and it seems to be in some sort of language, but they can't interpret it. Wow. And they're trying to figure out, why would it do that? Yeah, and of course, obviously, you know, your NASA guys are saying, well, maybe it got hit by a meteorite, or maybe there are some gamma rays out there that are bouncing around and caused it to do this. But the consensus seems to be that's almost impossible, and it's almost as though somebody changed the code on the Voyager 2. Is that weird?
It's very. It's definitely very weird, and it's one of those eerie things, because I'm a big fan of, like, TV shows, series like Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Space 1999, stuff like that. I'm a kind of a geek when it comes to stuff like that. So,
have you ever thought about, because I go way back, too, Back in whenever, this would have been, I don't know, 67, 68, I was working for the Lubbock Avalanche Journal in Lubbock, Texas. And it was a morning paper, so I was working in the afternoon, evenings, until late at night. And I made sure that I had my lunch hour about 6 o'clock so I could rush back to my little apartment and watch this funky little new show on TV called Star Trek, you know. And I kept trying to tell all my friends, you know, hey, you need to watch this. It's really cool. They got some interesting ideas. And they're just going, oh, man, and, you know, we don't want to be bothered with science fiction. But have you thought about this, Kevin? Watching the first Star Trek, I was enamored with their flip phone. You know, right. You flip it open and you say, beam me up, Scotty. And I'm going, boy, wouldn't it be cool if we had something like the flip phone? Well, hey, Kevin, we had it. And now it's obsolete.
Well, look at Dick Tracy with the...
Rich Radio.
Dick Tracy when he had the watch that with the TV on it or communicating with it.
And we could do that these days, like an Apple Watch. I could talk into my Apple Watch.
I heard you like we're the biggest consumers. I was thinking of like the Super Bowl on how many chicken wings are consumed. And just recently, I think they just developed chicken in a Petri dish. Did you hear that?
Yeah, and Hide and Watch, what they're working for, what they want is a chicken that's got about 12 wings.
Yeah. But it was just amazing. I think it's like over six figures for a piece of chicken. I mean, they say, well, if consumers buy it, then the price will go down. But I'm not going to drop $60,000 on a piece of chicken. But so, I mean,
nope.
Thing is growing a cow and saving some of the rainforest. But you can imagine that if stars burn out, I'm sure the sun could burn out. And
it's going to happen eventually with our sun.
Well, that's true. That's true. It is going to happen. It's just like, you know, we're all going to die at some point. I mean, mm-hmm. That's just a given. But before we get off Voyager 2, there's another tie-in. I was kind of interested to learn that on the Voyager 2 is a golden plate, and etched on there is drawings of a human man, a human woman, and also a diagram kind of where Earth is in relation to our... sun, everything else, kind of almost a roadmap.
Yep.
But also on there are recordings of sounds from the Earth. And as you might imagine, they have snatches of music from some of the greats like Beethoven and Chopin. But also on there is Chuck Berry playing Johnny B. Good.
Who passed away.
And I was reminded of that here the other day when I learned that Chuck Berry passed away. That's a loss, I want to tell you. And but can you imagine what some highly advanced alien civilization is going to think if they're able to decipher the golden disc on Voyager 2 and they pick up Johnny B. Goode, you know? And are they going to think that we must be some kind of really primitive race, or are they going to go, boy, Earth people are cool?
Well, hopefully they'll figure out that we've come a long way since that those were sent off, in the 70s,
77.
Right? Wow, is that long ago?
57?
I know. Is that amazing?
Yeah. That is amazing.
And the other amazing thing is that, you know, you got Voyager 1, you got Voyager 2, but I can't remember now why, but they shot off Voyager 2 before they sent off Voyager 1.
Oh, my.
Figure that one out.
Let me ask you this. From my understanding is that Battlefield Earth, that's going to be re-released, isn't it?
Yes, it was towards the end of last year. Brand new, it's out. It's huge. It's great reading. But I got to tell you about the audio book. Audiophile magazine already dubbed it the best audio book of 2016, and it hadn't even been out the full year. But it's amazing, guys. I hate to date myself, but I'm old enough to remember back before television.
You know,
I don't mean we couldn't afford television. I mean nobody had a television. And I, as a kid, I used to listen to the radio. And on the radio, they had what they call radio dramas. And they had all kinds of stuff. They had Marshall Dillon and Gunsmoke. They had Tarzan. They had Gangbusters. They had a lot of stuff like The Inner Sanctum and The Shadow. And they didn't, like today's audiobooks, you have some voice actor who just reads you the book. No, these were dramatizations. They would have different actors portraying the different characters in different dialects and different voices, and they would have sound effects and musical backgrounds and everything. Well, that's what they've done with Battlefield Earth audiobook. They have 68 different character voices doing the
War
acting.
Of the Worlds.
I was just going to say that, Jim. I was going to say, is it as good as Orson Welles' War of the World?
Same type thing. Okay, yeah. I mean, it's like you're really listening there, and I really think a lot of people, particularly younger people, have missed out on that because, you know, if you go to the movies, or you're watching TV, and here comes the monster. Well, there he is. You know, he's a guy in a rubber suit, or he's an animatron, or whatever. And you don't have to use your brain. You don't have to use your imagination. But on the radio dramas, even though they had the sound and the voices and the narrative, you had to picture it in your own head. And this is what the Battlefield Earth audiobook does. I call it a movie for the mind. Okay, and I've got to admit, it's really long, and I have not had a chance to listen to the whole thing from start to finish. But I've listened to different snatches of it, and it's just really intriguing.
Well, it's good to and from what I understand here, this is a 47-hour unabridged audiobook.
Yeah.
And it's got, I think you said 67 voice actors who were portraying nearly 200 characters.
Yeah.
And over 150,000 sound effects and full cinematic music score that goes along with this. So a lot of hard work went into it. You're talking.
I know. It's absolutely incredible. And the musical score, that's what gets me. I mean, that's this kind of almost a masterpiece in itself. You know, who does that? Who writes musical scores for audiobooks?
John Williams. George Lucas. I mean, that's what you're on par with if you're talking about music scores.
Yeah, you're right up there with the big boys.
Absolutely. Just a couple of other quick notes here. When Battlefield Earth was originally released, it was the New York Times an international best-selling novel, as it sold over 4 million copies. Was actually rated number 3 on the top 100 novels of the 20th century in the Random House Modern Library Readers poll. And I believe that with the 21st Century Edition, when it was released, it actually had 50 new pages containing handwritten author notes as he was writing the book.
Yeah, and they've included a in-depth interview with L. Ron Hubbard, and that's pretty interesting. I'm not sure where I saw this. It may be in that interview, but I found this a pretty funny anecdote. As I mentioned, he was a prolific writer. In fact, so prolific that back in the 30s and 40s, he couldn't sell anything because he'd say, "Well, we've already got, you know, 6 of your stories lined up and 5 more in the process." So one day he started writing under pen names, okay. And so one day he showed up at one of his publishers, and the publisher ran out and showed him this manuscript. He says, "Man, this is great." He said, "I wish you could write like that." And he looked at it. It was one of his own stories with a pen name on it.
Mr. Mars, we want to thank you for
being
our guest, and we appreciate it knowing that you've appeared on ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, even on the Discovery Learning and History channels to talk about your knowledge of stuff like this, stuff that you've written, and I didn't even realize that you are a best-selling author when it comes to investigating UFOs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. In fact, my book, Alien Agenda, which is based on the premise of, the argument and controversy over whether UFOs exist, is over. They're here. The question becomes, what's their agenda? Who is it? What do they want? But that book, Alien Agenda, has become the top-selling non-fiction book on UFOs in the world, because it's been translated in about a dozen languages. But let me leave you guys with this.
Yes.
Are the aliens out there? Almost certainly. Are they a danger to us? Are they going to come and attack the Earth? And I think the good news is probably not. And the reason I can say that is because if you actually do your homework, you'll find out that stories of flying machines and flying non-humans and entities with special powers goes all the way back through human history. Think Ezekiel. It was picked up by the fiery wheel and carried around, you know, to a city in the mountains and various places, and there it is in the Old Testament. And it goes back even further than that to the Sumerian culture, where they talk about the Anunnaki, those who came from the heavens and landed on the earth. So they've been with us all along. And if the agenda was to attack the Earth and, you know, eat us or burn all our cities like Independence Day, don't you think they would have done it long before now?
Don't get on that ship. We've deciphered the book. To serve man. It's a cookbook.
To serve man. It's not what you think.
Yeah.
It's my favorite Twilight Zone show. Well, that's the segment of Twilight Zone is To Serve Man.
Yeah, isn't that funny? There's probably a huge discrepancy between our ages and our education and our world experience, and yet we all remember To Serve Man.
Yep. It's a cookbook.
It's a cookbook. Oh, well, my God.
Jim, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And this is what I want to do. I'm going to put a little pin in this conversation. I definitely would like to have you come back on and talk a little bit about not only your book, but talk about UFOs and aliens and the whole concept one of these times. Maybe either later this spring or in the summer. Is that okay?
That sounds great. That would be quite enjoyable. And we might even want to talk about a new book I've got coming out. It's not quite released yet. It won't be out until, I think, early part of June. But okay. You're going to love it. It's called The Illuminati, The Secret Society That Hijacked the World.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's do this. Let's get Carmen on this. Let's book you back in here in June when the book is released.
Just pull Carmen's chain, and we'll see if we can't do this again.
Jim, thank you so much for joining us. Jim Mars,
thank you guys.
Journalist and author, talking with us about humans could be extinct in 1,000 years if we don't find a way to get off this rock. Pretty intriguing stuff, especially when science fiction meets science, when Stephen Hawking, the great physicist, scientist, is able to go, hey, you know, this stuff in L. Ron Hubbard's book, it could be true. What do you think, Richard Hand?
That was a great guest that you had on.
Talk right into that microphone.
I've
heard
him before on, like you say, he's been on other
he's done
stations.
Stuff.
And,
yeah, he's done stuff on
maybe even coast to coast. I think they talk
some
about
of the
UFOs.
Major networks, yeah. CNN, C-SPAN. He's also been on the Discovery, Learning, and History channels. I wonder if he's been on. You get that alien, the alien show there on the History
Alien
channel.
Files.
Something about alien, yeah. Something about early aliens or something like that, where they came and they visited.
Ancient aliens
ancient
or something.
Aliens,
yeah,
something like
good
that.
Show. I watched all that stuff.
Speaking of ancient, that could be a good segue here.
Yes.
Talking about coins, and talking a little bit about National Coin Week. What is the theme to this year's National Coin Week, Mr. Richard Hand, who is our next guest, our numismatist, who is going to be a front and center at the Brockton Main Library. That's 304 Main Street. It'll be Saturday, April 15th, 1 p.m. This is a chance to meet Richard. There's workshops, raffles, free raffles.
Yep.
Favorite four-letter word.
Which I'm going to tell everybody tonight, like what everybody would be receiving if they attended the event.
I'm looking at what I'm
tonight.
Going to get. I'm getting a little
a
bit
lot of the items
there.
In front of me. But the American Numismatic Association is federally chartered on the study and education of basically money and all forms of money from ancients to modern-day currency. The American Numismatic Association, if anybody wanted to research that association or National Coin Week, they can go on www.money.org, and you can find National Coin Week on there and some previous celebrations. But this year's theme, which is members are allowed to come up with ideas, and if you win the selection, you win some prizes, gold coins and stuff from the American Numismatic Association. Conflict and Courage, Money in the Military. And it's also the 100th anniversary of World War I, the war that was going to end all wars. And basically from ancient coins up to now, that money has been used. Vietnam, we definitely have a lot of veterans that have probably used military payment certificates, which you've probably seen on like the series MASH, where they have to turn in their money after a certain period of time or it's no good.
Right.
And so I actually have some of that in a display case at the library. And nowadays, our guys and gals are using what is called POGs. It's cardboard change with different themes on them. Could have a tank on it.
Talk about a wooden nickel, huh?
Well, you know, because of the weight factors, when you're flying over raw materials to our guys and gals overseas,
yep.
Cardboard is lighter versus sending over change.
Okay.
So you'd rather send over armor and bullets versus change. Paper money is light. So I actually have a bunch of these Pogs displayed. It's got military dogs on it being harnessed, ready to go up in a helicopter. Small change. Using AFIS, which is basically a Walmart for the military. It's a huge store. Okay. So that's
like a mobile PX or something?
Well, yeah, they can have that, or they actually set up shops overseas on the barracks or the,
it's like a mobile
the
PX.
Zones that they okay. set up, the safety zones or their bases, and they would bring in the items, or, you know, many times people send gift packages, but when they get a chance to go on liberty somewhere, they go to on another base away from the conflict zone and have small change. They're very highly collectible. I was fortunate enough to find some to put on my display.
Yeah, you got a bunch. You have a knack for having stuff. I don't know if you work with someone who is kind enough to mint stuff for you, or if you're collected to somewhere. Where do you get a lot of your stuff as far as the coins that are minted or pressed?
Well, so every year that everybody that attends my event. At the end, usually get a nice envelope with certain items in it, like this year.
Talk show hosts get them, too.
Yes, yes, I always... So, actually, like in this package I've given that I'm going to give you tonight, I've actually got the Lincoln Cent, the 2017.
It's not the wheat one, is it?
Nope, it's got the Shields design on the back since after 2009. They went to the Union Shield on the back. What's unique about the 2017 from the Philadelphia that everybody will be getting that attends... It's got the mint mark on it for P, which is because this year is the 225th anniversary of our United States Mint. Our mother mint was in Philadelphia, which used to be a whiskey distillery before they turned it into a mint, and it's grown and moved since then. So that's what's unique about this coin. They're only doing it one time, putting the P on the Lincoln Cent. They always identify the Denver coins. Why they always put mint marks on other mints? Back then, they had to have quality of weight. It had to be a 1 cent worth of copper, or 3 cents of silver in a 3 cent piece, or a 2 cent piece of copper, so they could tell what mint
nice
came from.
It's nice to see the penny is still staying around, seeing that there's always been talk.
Yeah, you know, that offends a lot of us numismatists because it's a cent.
Yeah, you want to go
pennies
away?
Pennies are in England.
I know. But, you know, the idea that the penny could eventually go away and then we would just, it would be, everything would be rounded off to a nickel. So it would be.
And what's surprising. It'd be
every 5 cents.
It's very little copper. It's 0.8% plating of copper over zinc. So it's the zinc that's costing us.
But the idea that so many people like myself, I couldn't tell you how many pennies I have. I mean, a couple, you know, I got maybe $40, $50, $60 worth of pennies and. You know what, I have some coins that I have stashed, so I think that might be worth something, but I've never had them looked at by a professional like yourself.
So, like, on these cents that I've 2x2'd, when they first was, the word got out, they were putting the P on the Lincoln cent for Philadelphia, eBay, $25 box was going for $225.
Really?
And I waited for a while for it to come down. I basically paid $4 for a 50-cent roll. And I bought enough to give to everybody. The Denver cents.
But they're only worth a penny each.
Yes.
1 cent.
But they're doing it for 1 year. Granted, they're going to make it a billion of these. Okay. But that was the way that
but
went.
So what are these worth on the street? Other than if I went in and I wanted to get myself a cup of coffee and I go, oh, here's and made it part of my.
Well, right now, I mean, there's no collective value to it. It's 1 cent. And if you were buying a cup of coffee. I don't know, what's it, $4? You need 400 of these 1 cent pieces.
As somebody who handles currency and coins, yourself, you have to have a little bit of a collection. Do you have, like, where you find yourself out buying certain grades of coins and paper money?
Well, it's all about disposable income with any collector. I was a collector at a early age, gave it up, chased after gasoline and girls. And, you know, cars and girls.
You're going to tell me you were a stamp collector.
Went into the Marine Corps, and then I got back, and what got me going was the state quarter program. So, you know, I kind of started going with the state quarters, and then that's when I started studying it with the American Numismatic Association, took classes on counterfeit detecting and grading, because that's what you're talking about, a grade. Yep. What coins that I'm attracted to, like the Standard Liberty Quarter, I have a few of those, you know. Decent grades, and
I'm going to let out a little itty bitty secret, and kind of a flawed segment that we have here because
I was really going to have an interesting segment. A guy who works at this very radio station and does a fantastic job when it comes to our oldies programs. You hear him on the weekends. Ron Dwyer is a guy who loves coins, and I've had in-depth conversations with him about various coins that he has seen and he has collected. And next time you're in here, I'm going to see if I can find a way to get to lure Ron in here, because
Great. You
guys, it could be quite the compelling conversation about the various coins and the history of various coins and currencies as we've seen throughout our years as a country.
And so also in this package that I'm, you know, been handing out, is, you know, we're into the America the Beautiful quarter. We did the state quarters, the territory quarters. This year, I've got the first one for 2017, the Effigy Mountains. That's a national monument in Ohio. And if you fly over it from a plane, it looks like bear mounds and a couple of eagles. It's called the Bear Trail. Mm. The Indian Native Americans did mounds the shape of animals. and so I get the Philadelphia, Denver, which you can find in circulation, but what I'm giving everybody else is also the one from San Francisco.
Okay.
It's uncirculated, and the only way you can get these is through the mint. If you do find an S Mint Mark America the Beautiful quarter, that means somebody's maybe collection got stolen,
uh-oh,
or a dealer or somebody, or uh-oh, somebody bought them, and then like nobody's going to give me any money. It's the long term for maybe the new stuff. Then also this year, you know, the Sacagawea has changed the theme to a Native American dollar coin, and every year they change the back of the dollar, the American Native dollar coin. This year it's got Sequoia. He was the gentleman that did the Cherokee language. He was a silversmith, a Native American. And, you know, that Cherokee language was very helpful during World War II, World War I, and Korea. Code Talkers.
Oh, yeah, there was a movie.
Yes.
There was one with Mel Gibson, was it? Or am I thinking of another movie?
No, that's another movie. Okay. I'm trying to think of the star that was on there, but they had to protect the Code Talkers. If they were compromised, they were given orders to kill the Code Talkers so they wouldn't fall in the enemy hands. What else I have here, too, Kevin, is every year I make a special elongated coin. That's on a Kennedy half dollar with a special process that saves the odd verse so you can see the date.
Sure.
2017 Kennedy half dollar. Usually you go to attractions, you can find a machine where you squash, or we call elongate.
That's different.
If you notice, that says Brockton National Coin Week 10th anniversary, City of Champions, and it's got two boxing gloves on it.
Very nice.
So I've started off with the nickel.
Are you going to have a press there that day?
No, I wish I had one. Paid big money to have those made. I had to pay for the die.
Well, we thank you for bringing these and showing these. And if now, is there a number of folks that will be able to get this? And if you show up in your number 97... and you've only given them
out to the first 75? Yeah, I've gotten close to the 100 mark of attendees and kids, and I usually have the kids do a project every year, and they bring it back, and they usually get special gifts. But it's usually I make everybody stay until the end. I have a good friend of mine, historian Jimmy Johnson. He's going to be running the theme this year on World War
I. I've met him.
Jimmy, yes.
I've met Jimmy.
He's an antique guy out of Franklin, Mass., numismatist himself, too. History teacher out of Franklin.
Nice.
So where he'll be doing the theme, and at the end of the talk, at the end of the program, because I do things with the kids and some games, and they can win other prizes, everybody gets a raffle ticket.
Free raffle.
But if I have more than 100, it's going to be who signed up by the list. Okay. So if anybody's interested, you want to probably call over to the Brockton Library at 508-580-7890, extension 301, and sign up for Saturday, April 15th at 1 p.m. at the main library, Brockton, 304 Main Street.
Yep.
Usually children 7 or older is a good working age for the children.
And just a quick note, if you happen to use somebody who attends the Brockton Public Library on a regular basis, I believe they can sign up in the children's room as well,
yes,
can they not?
Yes.
Richard, I want to thank you so much for coming in.
No, I appreciate it. I know I stiffed you last week. I was supposed to be here, but stuff happens.
strong words, but it's okay. Yeah. You came through. You were able to be a part of the conversation with Jim Mars, and also provide us with some of these fantastic coins. Again, if you're somebody who likes currency coins, you like history in general, this would be a great conversation. Richard does a great job putting these on a regular
basis. But, Kevin,
basis.
You know, like you asked me where I get some of these stuff I buy out of my pocket. And I also, for the bigger gifts, because everybody, I have a big raffle that everybody wins.
Yep.
I get donations from dealers, like at the annual Bay State Coin Show coming up April 20th, 21st, 22nd in Marlboro, Mass. 95% of the dealers donate anywhere from silver dollars to 2-cent pieces, 3-cent fractional banknotes. It's a nice time. Which I also got a couple of world banknotes for you that everybody, this is from Cambodia in Iraq.
All right. If I ever get over there.
Yeah.
Celebrating the 94th annual National Coin Week. If you get a chance, stop by the Brockton Public Library. You're suggested to sign up ahead of time. Call 508-580-7890, extension 301. Our guest, Richard Hand, thank you very much for joining us, sir.
Thank you, Kevin.
And we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
We will step aside for a moment. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Peter, business really has changed. Back in the old days, you literally stood in your father's shoes and walked in his footsteps, father and sons, keeping the family in the family business.
It's still that way today at Tiny and Sons Glass.
How is that?
Tiny taught us well. You've got to get to know the customers. People come in for glass service, we recognize them, and they know us.
Oh, that's got to be good.
People want to know who you are. That's right.
My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Final segment of Monday Night Talk again, coming up 8 o'clock. South Shore Live with Stan and the gang. No clue as to what they got going on for conversation or what's going on at the 9 o'clock lounge, but it's definitely an entertaining and informative show, just like Monday Night Talk. And if you've missed any of our segments, those segments are usually put up on a regular basis. We put the whole show up as a whole, so to speak. So if folks want to hear one segment or another you missed, you can just go to the WATD website, 959WATD.com. Click on the Monday Night Talk, the banner, which will be on your left-hand side. And it'll take you to all of our latest podcasts. Actually, probably all of the podcasts since myself and Joe took over the helm back, 5 years ago, Joe?
More than that.
Has it been more than that?
I think so.
So Joe has, as I promised, stuck around. And we're kind of here to kind of catch up with Joe, with some of the changes that we're going to be seeing. Knowing that we have a new administration, knowing that the president has put out his budget, what's your concerns as somebody who has been following the flood map saga, flood insurance, and how coverage will be provided to folks who need it, depending on where they are in the floodplain?
Sure. So it's actually very timely that I'm on here tonight, because on Wednesday night I leave on what I like to call my national tour. So I'll be going to present to and talk with the Coalition for Sustainable Flood Insurance down in New Orleans on Thursday. They are a national coalition that has been critical in actually not only advocating for, but proposing and having successfully passed reform legislation for the flood insurance program. I'll be talking to them about our legislative priorities. Then from there, over the weekend, I travel to Scottsdale, Arizona, where I will be at the National Determination Association's Flood Determination Association's annual conference. One feather I'd like to put in my hat is that in December I was elected to their board of directors. So it's kind of cool to sit on a national board that is actually relied on by not only the lending industry, but also FEMA interacts closely with us to get our take on the determination industry, which is, without going into it, almost the most critical part of the industry, because determinations determine whether you're in or out of the flood zone. It is a something lenders require. It's more than just looking at a map. There's a lot of tools that go into it, so it's our job. We're like the keeper of the crypt there. So it's really a cool position to be in, and it's something that really propels our region to another level, because we have a lot of insight through these connections that a lot of others may not when it comes to federal legislation and what's going on. So everyone, or maybe not everyone, but the National Flood Insurance Program is federally mandated. So it's voted in by Congress. It has to be reauthorized every so often. The reason that this year is such a big deal is because in 2017, the program is up for reauthorization. Right. It expires September 30th. And so there were a lot of people wondering, well, when would this, you know, happen? Would we just get a continuing resolution because of all the items Congress has to deal with? As you mentioned, Kevin, the new administration that's in. About 3 weeks ago, all of a sudden, the Congress hit the gas pedal, and we are looking at proposed legislation all of a sudden. We're looking at potential proposed legislation. There's a couple bills that are on the floor of the House currently to potentially reauthorize and reform the program. So we're hopeful that this will happen sooner than September 30th. It may very well happen in the next month or so.
And this will be extended for how long? Do we know? Is it 2 years, 4 years?
Well, the act which will probably not pass, but it's at least proposed, there's H.R. 1422.
That's the bill.
That's the Privatization Act. 1423 is the only reauthorization act on the floor now.
Okay.
Proposes a 10-year reauthorization.
Is
which
good or bad?
That is, I personally think it's good, because the short-term reauthorizations create chaos in the industry. Whether you're a lender, realtor, insurance agent like myself, we are always wondering we have people asking us all the time, well, where is this going to be in 5 years? Where is this going to be in 10 years? And for the last 5 years, I've had to tell people we don't know, because there was the reauthorization 3 years ago. There was the reauthorization 2 years before that. So you've got these short-term reauthorization and reform bills that create all this uncertainty. So to see 10, 15-year reauthorizations is encouraging.
If it's reauthored, though, can it be amended at any point in time if there is
absolutely
a flaw that is found?
And in fact, the 2012 Biggert Waters Act was a reauthorization. The 2014 Homeowners Flood Insurance Affordability Act was an amendment, so that can happen. Again, we would like to see a 10-year reauthorization, just because we don't want so much uncertainty in the industry right now.
And it makes it easier for you to be able to talk to customers, be able to talk to people who are looking to buy a home. I mean, one of the
Correct.
Things that you worry about is the various insurances that you're going to need to protect your investment.
Well, and kind of putting two hats on here, not only do I chair the Marshfield Coastal Coalition and coordinate the Massachusetts Coastal Coalition, I'm the flood insurance expert and specialist down at Rogers and Gray Insurance. So I see the flood insurance side of things all the time, every single day. And so, you know, one of the things that we deal with a lot is, the misrating and complications of the program. You know, one of the things I like to talk to people at meetings about my real life experience and understanding their issues and trying to understand where they're coming from. And I hear all the time, well, why am I paying this much and why am I paying that much? And in about 50% of the cases, you're being rated correctly. But I recently had a policy that I went through and corrected, where we saw a $20,000 a year savings in flood insurance. So the program is complicated. The program is, people have to know what their own building and their own, to understand their own situation. But, it's something that all these pieces need to be looked at. I think there's been a lot of talk on the private insurance side, too. You know, again, as an agent, I walk, hold the hands of people that are uncertain on which direction to go. Right now, as the program stands, if you have a artificially low rate and you leave the program for a private policy, that private policy technically can drop you if there's a loss. It's, the National Flood Program won't drop you. Private obviously will. But one of the biggest things right now, the biggest problem is if you leave the National Flood Insurance Program and then want to come back.
So any rate you were grandfathered into is no longer, right?
You lose.
Okay.
And not only that, but for these artificially low rates, which may seem high in some cases, but are actually lower compared to what could happen in the private industry, that insured, so the individual living in that home, will never be able to get those low rates again if they try to come back into the program. So now the bill I mentioned before, Bill 1422, the Flood Insurance Market Parity and Modernization Act, is hoping to close those gaps. So these are the things we have to look at when we're looking to reauthorize the program in 2017.
Okay, we're speaking with Joe Rossi. Joe is just more than my co-host, but Joe is he's an expert in the field of flood insurance. Was right there in the foreground when they were trying to fix some of the problems with the FEMA flood maps. Is it safe to say that the whole FEMA flood map issue is very much in the rearview mirror? It's not something that folks who have to sign up for flood insurance when it comes to their properties will have to worry or endure again? Or is this something that is reviewed every so often?
Well, from the grand scheme of things, if we want to look at kind of the nation as a whole, it's supposed to be once every 5 years. And if you saw President Trump's short, what we call the shorthand budget, or the smaller condensed version, there is a line in there to remove the extra spending to do FEMA flood maps. So this,
which is why I wanted to have you on,
sure,
to talk about that, because
yeah,
that has to be a concern.
It's a concern. Now, people around here may not think it's a concern because of all the issues we've had with mapping locally. But for a minute, look at the nation as a whole, and you have some maps that are so old that people are actually being either misrated or could benefit in a lot of cases from better mapping. Mapping, and when I say old mapping, we're talking mapping that hasn't been updated since the early 80s.
Wow.
So, you know, getting more technical, while around here it created issues in a lot of places, more getting more granular, as they like to say, can actually be very beneficial.
Well, I think, if I'm correct in my assessment, was that there was inaccuracies with the previous FEMA flood maps because they had taken the information from another part of the country and try to apply it here, right?
Well, that I guess when you look at it that way, it was really, you know, FEMA had a handful of models that they could choose from and did choose one that was acceptable for modeling around the country and did use it here.
But they quickly learned that when they try to apply it here, it's not a cookie cutter type of thing that you can do in order to apply it.
Right? And that's why the ongoing map revisions that are happening now uses more modeling that would be suitable, we'll say, for our area and really a lot of other areas, but it applies to our area very well. So if you look though at that line item in the budget, I believe it's $190 million a year in extra money. So on every national flood insurance policy, there's actually a policy fee, I think it's about $50 right now, that goes to paying for mapping to be done all around the country. So those policy holders are paying for that part. There's always a need for extra money. So that's the $190 million is that extra sum that comes from the general fund of the federal government to continue to add towards that mapping. So while it wouldn't end the mapping program in FEMA, it would pretty much put it to a very close to screeching halt, which again, at a national level, becomes a big issue. There was also talk about adding, and I'm not sure if this is still in there or not, there was word at one point of adding a surcharge to national flood insurance policies. And again, we saw how detrimental the surcharge in the 2014 reform was. I don't think the policies need to have any more surcharges added to it. So there, again, these are the things and the pieces that are moving all of a sudden very quickly right now that we're trying to get our hands around, which we do have our hands around both at the coalition and through my associations that I'm members of, that we're just trying to work through.
And kind of keep an eye on it if need be, because I know there's been times that, you know, that you guys have had to mobilize a delegation to go down to Washington, D.C. and have conversations to make sure that folks are paying attention to what's going on with FEMA and what's going on with this particular issue when it comes to flood insurance.
Yeah, locally, you know, locally with, especially with Representative Jim Cantwell, he's been on the cutting edge of getting that mapping, the local mapping issue, you know, delegations down to D.C. I will probably be down there in April at some point with some of the associations that I'm members of to really talk to the importance of certain parts of the program. You know, I think our group, both the Marshfield and Massachusetts Coastal Coalition, are looked to because we are one of the few national consumer groups where our pulse is on our consumer, the homeowner and the citizen, and we are constantly advocating for those types of reforms to be made to the program. You know, the surcharge was bad. You know, what can we do about getting the surcharge either removed to be added somewhere else or some type of lowering in the rates or, you know, something like that. I think right now the biggest part, too, is getting people mitigated. And what do I mean by that? But these older homes that are lower and seeing these huge premiums, how do we get money in there to elevate those homes, get them out of harm's way, and lower the premiums at the same time? We advocated for that years ago. It's actually one of the priorities in the reauthorization this year, not just because of us, but because of everyone being on the same page nationally. So really, this is a big time for the program. The next month and a half are going to be critical to being really in the weeds, knowing exactly what's going on.
And again, it was valuable to have you in here. Again, we are a coastal community here in Marshfield, and a lot of the folks who listen to 95.9 WATD, whether they're in Scituate or Plymouth or Hull,
sure,
you name it, a lot of them, coastal communities are, you know, they're worried about any changes that may come, and hopefully, as you said, any acts that are ratified or put forth will be for longer than just a couple of years, but hopefully for a 10-year window.
That is what we're hoping, and there's so many different facets, too. It makes it very interesting. So what I would encourage is people to do two things, to visit both the Massachusetts Coastal Coalition, which is massachusettscoastalcoalition.org, in the Marshfield Coastal Coalition, which is marshfieldcoastalcoalition.org.
There's a big picture of Joe pointing to the coast going, there's the coast.
Yep, that picture has been removed. No, but what I would encourage people to do is go there, because we have probably more information on those two websites than any one individual will ever need. But one of the things that we're doing at the Massachusetts Coastal Coalition is we've actually not only posted the legislation that's been proposed, we've also posted white papers on reform ideas and YouTube videos of the hearings that have been held to reauthorize the program from this year. So it's really, if you want to get involved and kind of know where it's going, you can absolutely go on there and watch. On the Marshfield Coastal Coalition website, we have a lot of local information about how to hopefully reduce your premiums, what to know, what's going on actively now. Join our email list. We're doing a lot of emails now, and I know sometimes people get tired of hearing about the and seeing our emails, but it's all because of so much activity. So that's why I would tell people, you know, we're accessible at any time. And so, you know, info@marshfieldcoastalcoalition.org. We have a bunch of stuff going on this year. Get engaged.
Joe, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
To figure out a way to lure you back in again to be the co-host.
Anytime.
Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a good evening.